Hello, Hyrule. Welcome back to the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name is Chris. Hey, Pete, I don't know of any other podcast that does multiple episode zeros. I don't know if that's like a standard we should. We do have an episode zero, but from then on, we started calling it a travel brochure, sure. Which I think makes more sense.
I mean, yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, don't get it twisted, though. That is episode zero. So are you ready? Are you ready, Chris? Are you ready to jump into this, you know, very, very challenging,
very special, very unique and special,
yes,
Legend of Zelda title? Yeah, I'm excited. I think this is going to be a fun episode, if I'm being honest with you.
I'm ready. I have a nice big old cup of apple cider here, some apple blood ready to go.
And I have black tea. So we didn't really talk about this in the travel brochure, but maybe we should give a brief overview of what we're thinking for the structure of the season.
Oh, it's going to be like four episodes, right?
Yes. We're going to take a little bit of a different approach this season. Today's episode is going to be focused on the story and the Chamber of Insights. Pretty standard fare. We kind of did this with the Picori Festival.
Right. The plot and at least one location.
Yeah. That being said, next episode, we are tackling the Sea of Trees, Talus Cave, and Death Mountain all in one episode.
I mean, how different is it really from what we've done previously?
I think it's pretty different. That's three separate locations in one episode. We've never really done that.
Right, but the way that the levels in this game are compiled is just like different chunks of, you know, little mini dungeon puzzles that you can
do. Exactly. And that's why we're doing it. We could either take the approach of doing very brief episodes for a longer period of time, or give less episodes, but each episode is a little bit meatier and has more stuff
Chris,
in it.
Chris, I genuinely do not think we could pull an entire episode out of Sea of Trees. If you are about to suggest.
I am glad we don't even have to entertain it. So yeah, you know, we'll have probably four episodes. Then we're going to do Vati and the Realm of Memories in an episode at the end. And we'll figure out the bonus stuff as we go.
Yeah. And you know what, for me though, that's not that weird. What's weird for me is that this season, there won't be a manga episode.
There won't.
Yeah. The original Four Swords does not have a manga. When we were talking previously about how Four Swords has two books, I previously had thought that like maybe Four Swords and Four Swords Adventures had their own individual books. Turns out Four Swords itself, completely vacant.
I know at least one person who read the Four Swords Adventure manga in preparation of this season of Hello Hyrule.
Well, it wasn't me.
And I apologize. We had no idea until we already started this season. But I'm looking forward to getting to that eventually. I really do like these manga.
Yeah, in a few years? In a few years, maybe?
Yeah, we got a lot of big ones coming up. That being said, this one is not a big one. And like I mentioned earlier, we're tackling the story today. Pretty much the whole story. We're going to spoil the whole thing in one episode because there's really not a lot of story here.
You could fit the plot of this game in a thimble. There's nothing. Well, there's not nothing, because like the way that this podcast works is that we're going to extrapolate stuff that's definitely not there.
I am so ready to extrapolate. Speaking of that, where we're going to start today is not the opening cutscene of The Legend of Zelda. The Four Swords.
It's not?
No, we're going to start slightly before it in the timeline. Just like Skyward Sword had events and a hero that occurred right before the events of Skyward Sword.
I mean,
generally the stuff that was in the manga.
Yeah.
Okay.
Questionable canon.
Okay. This also has some canon stuff that occurred between the Minish Cap and Four Swords.
This is news to me.
And I'm very excited to discuss it. And I want to give a shout out to Lore Master Kex, who you might remember wrote in towards the end of last season.
Yeah.
Who helped me compile a lot of this information from different books. And different, different other theorists and whatnot.
Just, I'm going to ask you at the top here, Chris, does it explain why Vati is considered a wind mage?
No.
Ugh, ah. It's all I wanted. It's the number all one right. thing I wanted.
So let's go to right after the Minish Cap. The Four Sword, our sacred blade, is enshrined in the Four Sword Sanctuary that seals away a great evil, the Wind Sorcerer Vati.
Okay.
Right? So that's kind of what's going on at the start of Four Swords, right?
Yeah.
This Four Swords Sanctuary is not the Elemental Sanctuary. At first I was like, oh, is this possibly the Elemental Sanctuary?
No, it's a completely new location. It's got like a big like artistic rendering of Vati on a back wall.
It is the coolest thing. I actually am super... I wish we could talk about the Four Swords Sanctuary all episode because I'm just super into the vibe of it.
This is that thing that you had sent me like a year ago talking about Tears of the Kingdom. Like that thing on the back wall kind of resembles the back of Link's shield.
Whoa.
You, what do you mean, whoa? You showed it to me.
Yeah. No, we totally did talk about it. Yes. So you mentioned the eye that resembles Vati, right? So this implies this is, you know, a warning of, oh, Vati is in this sword.
Right.
So another touch I really like looking at the sanctuary here is the four elements that we collected from the Minish Cap.
Yeah,
you see that?
Yeah.
Isn't that a cool touch?
Like, it is interesting because, like, they're not in the sword anymore, right?
I guess not. Or unless this is, like, the drained shell of the elements, right? Like, the elements themselves are, like, powered up the sword.
Could be. I mean, what if this was just, like, a screenshot of this will be on the Instagram. But what if this is just like Hyrule and the royal family trying to recreate the situation, like recreate the facility of the Elemental Sanctuary,
but outside of it
because it got sealed away.
Well, I think we're going to kind of get close to some of that in just a second here, but keep that in mind for sure. Anyway, so at some point after the Minish Cap, Vati managed to resurrect and attack Hyrule once again.
As you do.
Kidnapping maidens and taking them to literally the Palace of Winds.
The former home of the Wind Tribe.
Yep. I would like to know what happened to the Wind Tribe. I would like to know when he started squatting up there.
It might have just stayed vacant even after we beat Gjorgpair, you know?
I guess so. Oh, yeah. I guess the palace itself has been vacant and the Wind Tribe is kind of like adjacent to it.
Right. They had their own place to live, their big old mansion.
Yeah, that's true. And you might be asking yourself, didn't Vati explode at the end of the Minish Cap?
Hey, Chris, didn't Vati explode at the end of the Minish Cap?
He did. And now he's back. And I got nothing. I got nothing as to why.
It could be anything.
There's part of my brain that it wants to be like, oh, that's demise. That's some demise. He's got the demise in him.
I mean, it's possible. We talked a lot last season about how Vati got corrupted by malice, possibly. And if we are to follow my previous theory about how malice works, where it just holds on to everything that it corrupts, like genetically, all the code, it might have just kept Vati in there. Like Vati just lives in malice now.
It could be. It could also be that Vati was able to successfully absorb some light force from Zelda at the end of the Minish Cap.
Could be that too.
Which could have kept him hanging along even when we thought he was passed.
Maybe he just didn't die.
Maybe he just didn't die. It seems like it would be very sloppy if those gathered after the finale of the Minish Cap were just like, oh, he's fine. We could just leave him there.
We see he gets woobified in the manga, so like...
Yeah, but that's not canon.
I know.
He totally gets woobified. In fact, in my notes here, I was initially going off of the events of the manga, like, oh, well, we know he lived. And it's like, oh, wait, no, we don't.
Not true.
Anyway, years and years after the Minish Cap itself, there is a new hero, a new Link. This is a Link with no game.
What?
This is a Link referred to as the hero of the Four Sword.
What?
What we hear about him is he's an aloof hero. And when he's told about what is happening with Vati, he grabs the Four Sword and declares that he's off to slay the sorcerer.
What is this from?
This is from the Hyrule Historia.
For real?
This is in the Hyrule Historia. Yeah.
I do not remember this.
Yeah.
So this guy is called the hero of the Four Sword.
The Four Sword hero that doesn't have a Four Sword game is called the hero of the Four Sword.
Right. So what is this Link in this game called?
I think the community has names for him, but I don't know that there's an official name.
Hero of the Four Sword 25th anniversary.
the 25th anniversary hero. That's probably what it is. So an interesting note about the hero of the Four Sword, this in-between hero. When he first appeared from the forest, he was already in possession of the Four Sword. There's really no, like, build up to like him finding the Four Sword.
Oh, that's weird.
Which has led some of the community to believe that between the Minish Cap and at this point, the Four Sword might have been passed down.
Sure.
Between hero generations, and this might be a direct descendant of the hero of the Minish Cap.
Could be.
Something to recall, we never put the Four Sword back in a pedestal at the end of the Minish Cap, something that very clearly happens in a lot of Zelda games with the Master Sword.
No, at the end of Minish Cap, you just kind of have the Four Sword still.
Exactly. So basically, this hero rescues the maidens who spoke of how his sword caused him to split into four copies of himself, and how the four who were one work together to subdue the Wind Sorcerer. Following this, the hero returned to the forest, never to be heard from again.
Ooh.
And the blade was left enshrined deep within the forests of Hyrule in the Four Sword Sanctuary, where it served as Vati's prison. This brings us to the start of Four Swords.
Ooh, do you know what really would have been cool? What vibes I got from that story just now?
What vibes did you get?
You just finished Twilight Princess for the first time, right?
Oh.
Okay.
Pete, there's nothing in this world I want more than to spend a full episode of Hello Hyrule talking about Twilight Princess. So please tread lightly.
Okay, so the words Hero's Shade. What if this mystery Link is actually Minish Cap Link, but is some sort of equivalent of the Hero's Shade?
I guess it could be possible.
That's why he mysteriously appears from the woods and mysteriously vanishes back from whence he came.
I it would be weird that the timeline distinguishes him separately, you know?
Hmm.
But, I mean, I do like the idea of them spanning. That's like exactly my jam now, is the idea. I think it also happens in A Link Between Worlds.
What?
One Link spanning multiple games.
Oh.
There's an old man who is the hero of legend.
Is there?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, in which game?
In A Link Between Worlds.
No. Are you serious?
Pete, put this on the shelf. 7 years from now, when we're both in our late 30s, we will resume this conversation.
I'll put that in my pocket and hopefully I'll remember it's there in the laundry.
Anyway, so that's going to bring us to the actual story of Four Swords.
25th anniversary.
25th, the hero of the 25th anniversary. We see Link and Zelda arrive at the Four Sword Sanctuary.
New Zelda design.
Good Zelda design.
Like, I was so surprised. This was, I think, my biggest surprise for this game. There was a Zelda design that I have not been aware of.
A lot of designs in this game reappear in the Minish Cap.
Yeah.
This is not one of those designs. This is like the rare case that is unique to this game.
Buckwild, that they did it just for this game too.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, this is not at this exact moment of the cutscene, but since we're talking about Zelda, she also has kind of a unique personality compared to other Zeldas too.
What would you say is her personality?
We can talk about this in just a second. But when Vati obviously busts out of the sword and like he starts going to town here, Zelda is not afraid of him at all. And it's just like, how dare you unhand me?
That's true. Yeah, you would think like this is like a scary form of Vati, especially, and like immediately overwhelms both of them. And yeah, she doesn't seem too timid at all.
Possibly they've seen the figurine carved by Karlov?
Must have seen Karlov's figurine. Alright, so Zelda expresses that she senses Vati, the Wind Mage's seal in the Four Sword, has weakened over time. Link starts to approach the sword, and Zelda says, "Careful, it is said that the body of one who touches this blade will be shattered to pieces."
Dope.
It has mysterious powers. She then describes the story of the previous hero that I pretty much described a second ago. So there you go. It's not only in the book. Zelda explains in this cutscene a very little bit, like less detail than I gave.
See, like when I read that, I was assuming she was talking about Minish Cap, like retroactively.
It's one in between.
Right, because Minish Cap did not seal Vati in the sword.
Exactly.
Weird.
Exactly.
It's just that one detail makes a whole new Link.
Right. So, and that's how links are made. So lore master Kex actually had an idea here, coupling the fact that the former hero of the Four Sword that I mentioned earlier lived a hermit's life, came to slay Vati and left just as quickly. Like I said, after slaying Vati, went right back to the forest and became a recluse again.
Huh.
Kex is theorizing that the battle with the Four Sword and splitting the personalities broke this hero's brain and made them essentially like, let me go into hibernation because it's safest for everyone.
Or what? Like,
he chose this life because his fractured mind could not handle living in proper society anymore.
Are we to assume that every Link that uses the Four Sword goes nuts?
Again, Zelda says, it is said the body of one who touches this blade will be shattered to pieces.
Assuming that the Four Sword gives you this ability to make four of yourself, like that detail was just passed down through hearsay and, you know, urban legend, to where like, you know, I heard you get like, I heard if you wield this sword, there's going to be four of you. Well, I heard there could be 16 of you. Well, I heard there's like, it just shatters you to a million pieces, to where it's like, oh, it's not just like a superpowered hero blade. Touching this blade will kill you.
But there's also like, if you consider, you know, the different personalities of like, the Links in the Four Swords manga with the different personalities.
Questionable canon again.
Questionable canon, but I do like the idea. I mean, hey, it could just be an introverted Link. I can feel that too. I get that fully.
Or he's a spirit of the woods.
Okay. I'm pulling it back. But Kex, definitely write in if I missed any detail there. And thank you for sharing that bit of info. So Zelda goes to examine the blade. She's grabbed by Vati in his Vati's Wrath form from the Minish Cap.
Okay.
Who's hovering atop the sanctuary. He says he hid because he sensed a great presence approaching, but he didn't expect a noble maiden. He then kidnaps Princess Zelda, and he mentions that he plans to marry her at the Wind Palace.
Problematic.
That's not great, dude. Come on.
Yeah, I don't know why Vati suddenly desires a child bride, but I think we should probably resolve this.
Some fairies wake up Link, who got knocked the heck out.
Mm-hmm. Some fairy spirits, by the way.
Fairy spirits. We're going to get into that briefly.
I don't know if we've talked about the distinction, right? Because fairies actually have like a physical body you can see, like a Tinkerbell. But fairy spirits are just like the orb.
Fairy spirits are Tattle and Tail.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
We're going to talk a lot about fairies this season. But the fairies wake Link up. They say that he was knocked out by Vati. They have to save the princess, but he can't do it alone. He then picks up the Four Sword and splits into four.
As the actual, you know, sprite of the sword on the map becomes much smaller in Link's hand.
Yes. Yeah, that's kind of a bummer, right? They should just give him a great sword.
Ooh, that would, in a 2D game, that'd be really cool.
They say, no matter how mighty the enemy, with the power of four, you can defeat it. The great fairies ahead know the path to his palace. If the great fairies acknowledge your abilities, they will show you the way.
Yeah, if you can pay.
Yeah, yeah.
The great fairies demand tribute.
So we've talked about in the past how every Zelda game is loaded with trials for Link. Every Zelda game has trials for Link. It's probably the most prevalent trope in these games, it feels like.
I mean, plot-wise, the game is the trial. There's nothing but trial.
That's all this game is. And the trial is get money, dude.
Get paid.
And like, I played Wind Waker recently, and you get a lot of money in the Wind Waker. Wind Waker Link is poor compared to the Four Swords Link.
Yeah, can't Wind Waker get like a wallet the size of like 5,000 rupees or something?
Yeah, you can get thousands and thousands of rupees in Wind Waker. Also, okay, we can't start getting into Wind Waker. I want to talk about many Zelda games.
We can't litigate those games yet. We have to move on.
Okay, and now we're going to actually kind of span the rest of the game. That was all the intro. The four Links travel across three different lands before confronting Vati in the Wind Palace.
Several times.
Yeah, is there like a good story reason?
I'm thinking that like, okay, we talked about the epics last time, so I don't need to give a big explanation. I think each epic is just a retelling of the same story with a different difficulty level. Genuinely, because I don't recall there being alternate endings. Maybe I'm wrong.
I've only finished the game fully once, so I don't know. We'll check back in next episode and we'll see if you're wrong there.
Yeah.
But after an arduous battle between the sorcerer and the heroes, Link was able to reseal Vati into the Four Swords blade. Zelda and Link reunite. Zelda says, oh, you saved me, but this time something feels different. There's two of you? So the legend of the Four Sword was true, but how can we get you back to normal?
And then all the Links just kind of schlorp back together.
They definitely do schlorp back together, yes.
Problem solved.
Yeah, she says, now let us return the Four Sword to its shrine once again.
Yeah.
They do so, not making the mistakes that they made in the Minish Cap. And the hero saves the day, and Zelda is safe, and everything's good. And that's the story of Four Swords.
And that's it. That's the whole thing.
There's also the Realm of Memories, which doesn't make an appearance in any of that story.
The Realm of Memories. We're going to have that in the Wind Palace episode, I think.
We've got some theories from the community that I cannot wait to share with you about that. But yes, that will be a future episode.
That ought to be good.
So yeah, anything else about the story you wanted to talk about before we jump into this episode's location?
You know, as weirdly short as it is, it's more or less the same plot as any other Zelda game.
Yeah.
Like, the if you just took that same plot and put some dungeons and, like, a town in it, that's basically any Zelda game.
Zelda captured, Link does trials, Link saves Zelda, sword gets put back in a pedestal.
Yeah.
As someone who has played what feels like 13 Legend of Zelda games in the calendar year 2022, yeah, that happens a lot more than I'd like to admit.
You are going to burn out so hard.
I'm still riding high, baby. Twilight Princess and Wind Waker are a very good duo.
We got to talk about Twilight Princess at some point. We still haven't since you beat the game.
We will. We will. We'll find time. But yeah, it was fine. It's fine. Like, this is, like you mentioned, it's kind of like a party game.
Yeah.
So you're not really coming to this game for story in the way that you would most other Zelda
games. You're playing this game to have some frantic, you know, gameplay with your friends and to yell at your friends and, you know, maybe end some friendships over it. That's kind of the whole game.
So with that out of the way, maybe we jump into the Chambers of Insight.
There's only going to be the briefest of music clips for this level, because the soundtrack for the majority of this game, Chris, is hot garbage.
Pete, I redid the... Okay, let's be transparent for a second. There's no way to buy Four Swords Anniversary legally, like in any virtual shop.
Right.
So we had to emulate this game to play it.
We had no option.
We had no other option. I want to pay for every game we cover on this show. Yeah. I had no way to do it.
Make it available for purchase now. I will pay for it.
I've had this ROM crash on me so many times that I've replayed the Chambers of Insight 3 times.
Oh.
I took psychic damage listening to the music.
Chris,
of this level.
Chris, you don't gain anything from playing the Chambers of Insight.
I didn't know you could skip it.
You can entirely skip it. Go to any level you want.
Oh, I know that now because I learned it at the end of the 3rd time I did this tutorial.
And it's just a control. Here's the thing. I feel like ordinarily I wouldn't need the Chambers of Insight. It's just a huge tutorial level.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, being forced to emulate the game, thank you, Papa Nintendo, I actually did need the early portions of this stage to actually configure my controls and make sure I had the right buttons down.
It did help in that regard. You weren't just thrown right into battle.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the music is like an 8 to 10 second loop.
And that's in the level.
It's across the whole level.
If you're on the world map, that clip is even shorter.
Yeah. Yeah. I am very passionate about Zelda music in general. I am not very passionate about the music at any point in this game.
No. Honestly, there are some very talented, like, Zelda soundtrack cover artists.
Oh, sure.
Any one of you, if you are listening to this show, I defy you to cover any of Four Swords Anniversary Edition.
Aaron Grubb is going to listen and make a beautiful orchestration of the Chamber of Insight music.
Can't be done. Can't be done. No way.
I don't know, Aaron. I know you're listening. Anyway, let's talk about a description of this level.
It is a underground bunker.
Is it?
It that's what strikes me. It's definitely underground or in a cave.
Okay, I guess I can kind of see that. At first, I thought maybe this was like a very bland version of Hyrule Field, but the next level is the Hyrule Field of this game, essentially.
If even.
It's kind of like the forest area.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I... This... I don't know. What would you say is the color palette of
brown, beige?
Yeah, kind
of. There's not a lot. I mean, this is just the main hub area of this place too, because there are other levels you go down that do look like they have like grassy plains and whatnot.
Yeah, it is. You know what? Now that I'm looking at it again, I totally see what you're saying about this being underground.
Yeah,
that was a good observation.
I could not tell you what this place is. My assumption was that this was like some long buried temple of some kind. And that's the best I could do.
Maybe. Chambers of Insight. I want to like tie that to some like Sheikah bunker where they had like information that they were, you know, holding about the royal family, maybe, or but there's nothing.
Here's the thing though. Let's go with the name, okay? Let's follow the root of the name. The Chambers of Insight, a.k.a. the Shrine of Beginnings, a.k.a. the Temple of Knowledge, a.k.a. the Origin of Knowledge, a.k.a. the Caverns of Knowledge.
What are these things that you're saying?
These are the different names for this place in different localizations.
Interesting.
Yeah, so this is like a place of one, knowledge, but two, also a place of beginnings.
Okay. It makes sense. I want to know who, well, I guess we know who preside over this place. Stray fairies.
Do they though? I have so many questions about the populace of the Chambers of Insight, but I just have a really quick question about the original Japanese name being the Shrine of Beginnings, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Do we know for a fact that the 25th anniversary hero is a hero yet? Because we know the whole game is about like him proving himself, him becoming, you know, a real hero, etc. We don't know that he's got any connection to the Triforce, first off.
No.
We never see him swing a sword until the Four Sword has been drawn.
Right.
Is it possible at all that this Link has no formal training, is not a hero in any regard whatsoever, until Zelda's in danger?
And he's just a boy, and that goes after his friend?
He's just some kid.
But then why would the fairies?
Because they've seen previous Links, and they're like, hey, okay, you might be able to do it. Here, prove it. And then, you know, maybe also make a buck on the side.
I mean, it could be. Yeah, I wish we could tie... I mean, I guess it's almost as if the fairies in this game have taken the role of Sheikah, of like Impa,
you know,
specifically in other games, right? Because we do see a lot of stray fairies in this one area.
Just here.
We see some of them outside, and we do have fairies nudging us along throughout the other locations, but they're heavily concentrated here, right? So they are, this is Link's Rocky montage. This is Link, like you said, learning how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
These fairies want Vati's head on a platter.
Could be, because we never get like any real insight to fairy culture, I'm gonna say, mm-hmm. in the franchise. We just kind of run into them in their own, you know, little domiciles and, you know, get a reward and leave them alone.
Yeah.
So is it possible at all that like the fairies, at least these current great fairies that we're going to encounter later, have some kind of vendetta against Vati that we're not aware of?
I was going to save this for the next episode, but we might as well tackle this now because we've built up so much.
Okay.
I have another theory from Lore Master Kex, who states, as I've already mentioned, never in any other game do the fairies come out in such force like this, which is true. Not only do we see stray fairies all over the chambers and fairies after each level, but in the grass itself that you cut,
mm-hmm.
every 5 blades of grass, you'll get another fairy. It's any other Zelda game.
Well, Chris, that's because this is a party game and you have 4 players normally.
I get it, but it's still, if you're taking everything as a lore thing, I think...
In the kayfabe.
Know, yeah, in kayfabe. Fairies are more common in this game than standard recovery hearts, even.
That is true.
And the great fairies are not just simply giving you power-ups, they're actually helping you infiltrate Vati's palace, as you've mentioned a second ago. This leads Kex to wonder, in the Hero of the Four Swords era, the previous hero that
the mystery
we discussed,
hero.
The mystery hero, if Vati has done something to enrage the fairies. And so we revisit the tale of Vati's previous rampage.
Okay.
It's said that he kidnapped beautiful women and girls from all around Hyrule and took them prisoner.
Ooh.
Well, most great fairies from throughout the franchise, except for like the alien great fairies from Wind Waker and Four Swords Adventures, ironically.
Sure.
Most of the other fairies take the form of beautiful women.
Ooh.
We know, thanks to Majora's Mask, Link to the Past, and Oracle of Ages, that the Great Fairies can be injured.
Uh-huh.
Can be injured, cursed, and otherwise harmed by those who wish them ill will.
Sure.
I wonder if Vati had not also kidnapped a Great Fairy at some point during his previous rampage, thus earning the ire of the fairy people.
Interesting, interesting.
That's a good theory, right?
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely explain a lot of things.
These fairies are like,
Hey Link, did you hear what Vati said? Your hair's dumb.
they're like amping him up to take down Vati in a way that Great Fairies really never played this exact role before.
I'm currently looking up the Great Fairies from Minish Cap.
It's the insect ones.
They have the same sprites as the ones in this game. Mm-hmm. So are they the same people? They just go by different names. So I'm trying to see if there's anything like...
Okay, good luck.
There isn't like a fourth fairy in that game, is there?
Oh, Pete. Are we going to start getting into this territory?
Okay, yeah, no. I did honestly for a second wonder if, like, is there actually a fourth fairy in Minish Cap we don't remember? Like, and we could pinpoint which one got kidnapped or hurt by Vati?
Oh, yeah, the sand fairy, and you don't actually see her, but she, at the end of one of the dungeons, there's a giant monument, and listen, I gotta talk about Twilight Princess with someone. I'm just gonna sneak it into the conversation about Four Swords. Anyway...
Wait. Okay, this is, I'm going way off the path here, but Twilight Princess, you get the boomerang. What's living inside the boomerang? The Fairy of Winds, right?
Okay.
There, as far as I'm aware, there is no Fairy of Wind in Four Swords, right?
Huh, you're right, the Fairy of Winds.
Inside the Gale Boomerang, the Fairy of Winds is there, trapped inside. There is no Great Fairy of Wind, and Vati being the Wind Mage... he trapped the Great Fairy in the boomerang, and that's why they're after him in Four Swords.
Wait a minute, you might be onto something here. I mean, maybe some of it's a stretch, but
it's a huge Laffy Taffy stretch, Chris, but I honestly dig this theory a lot.
Okay, anyway, I don't want us to get too hung up on any one thing, but that was a fun conversation about fairies. Let's talk about what the Chamber of Insights is structurally. So basically, Link is, you know, Link exists. He kind of just, you press A on the map and you're in the Chamber of Insights. It's like almost unceremoniously abrupt.
Yes.
There are some stray fairies around.
Stray fairies being the exact appearance from Majora's Mask.
Yes.
Which, as we know, are just like scattered pieces of a shattered Great Fairy.
Which, the ramifications of that, we haven't seen those types of Great Fairies. We've only seen the types of Great Fairies that were in the Minish Cap so far.
Right.
Are these stray fairies the ones that come together to form the Great Fairies we see in the next game, Ocarina of Time?
Could be. Is this the Great Fairy that Vati hurt and they're getting revenge for?
Interesting. I don't know. So the stray fairies inhabit this place. There are warp portals all over this place, which, mm-hmm. like, do we want to discuss the ramifications of literal warp portals everywhere?
I mean, okay, so you say warp portals, right?
Yeah.
We've had little warp pads or little, you know, warp lights that you can activate in different dungeons based on, like,
sure.
when you make progress in them.
Okay, so it could be that.
It's not that weird. Portal magic is just a thing.
Portal magic is just a thing.
But each of these portals lead you to an individual room or chamber where you can learn the controls of the game or learn the ins and outs of a particular tool that you can use in the game.
Yeah, there are 9 separate warp portals in this tutorial because, like, once it opens up and you just see that you're just warping around this tutorial, it feels mm-hmm. like it's never going to end.
Maybe this is a training montage and it takes like 3 years.
It really feels like it. And each warp portal has like the weapon that you're going to learn about next to it.
Right.
Aside from 3 of them, the first 2 portals are considered basic training, mm-hmm. and the last portal just just has a question mark next to it.
I mean, you especially need the early ones if you're playing single player to, you know, understand how to move around with and take advantage of Blurtis.
Yeah, yeah. This stuff is very valuable for Anniversary. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Past that point, though, the individual item rooms, you could probably just ignore.
It's so excessive. Like, if you've ever played a Zelda game, we said it last episode, you've dealt with a lot of this stuff.
Especially if you just played Minish Cap.
For sure. And we will briefly go over each of the warp portals in a second. I just want to make note of a few things that the Stray Fairies say before we do.
Okay.
What the third text bubble in this video game, Four Swords, a Stray Fairy tells you, you can just totally botch a puzzle and have to restart.
Yeah, that's happened to me. It's not fun.
You're not starting off on your best foot if, like, one of the intro text bubbles that's being said to you is, yeah, you might break a puzzle. If you do, just press start and hit the reset button.
Hey, yeah, the game's not perfect. Have fun.
Another Stray Fairy says, in this world, those who collect the most rupees are noted as the greatest heroes.
I severely doubt that.
That's according to the fairies. That's what they
What if you're just some old miser who's, you know, steals and hoards his money?
I had a ongoing joke about how Wind Waker Link is the hero of capitalism, not only with his massive wallet, but also the fact that he goes to auctions.
Yep.
Like, and participates excitedly.
Throws his money around.
But like, that gets thrown right out the window with this Link.
Yeah, I mean, especially he would be the hero of capitalism because he's being taken advantage of.
For sure. So yeah, that's pretty much all I have in regards to notable dialogue. Should we start knocking out these warp zones?
I'm down. Let's do it.
Warp zone number one. This is the warp zone where it doesn't have an icon next to it, but essentially we're going to learn about the shield and the Nat Hat here.
The Nat Hat being very much like Eslo, but worse.
Just a second. Early on, you get Razor Seeds, which I was like, what game is this when that started happening? Like,
we talked about the seeds that you can get. The power-up seeds, we talked about that in the previous episode.
Yeah. We have our first combat section in this warp portal. I'm going to send you a picture because I was trying to figure out what this pedestal was.
Okay.
You want to describe what you're looking at?
So first, I want to explain. When you get to a big combat section, typically you, like, all the players available will have to stand together on a stone slab that then sinks down into a platform.
Yes.
That activates the combat. The slab that you step on appears to have some sort of engraving that looks like two little heads. I mean, I assume this is from two player, if you're playing with two people.
Very well could be.
This is two little heads doing little kissy mouths.
Okay. I mean, that's an interpretation of it. It very much is like an identifiable shape, though.
Sure. It's either a duck head or a fish.
It's either a duck head or a fish, or, like I identified in the picture that Pete's so afraid to mention, clearly a Jabbernut from the Minish Cap.
Is it clearly a Jabbernut?
No. But like, it got in my head when I saw this. I was like, what is that? And then I played more and I realized, oh, every one of these stone slabs has a different image.
Mm-hmm.
And they probably mean nothing because they wanted to make a bunch of unique images.
I know what it is, though, Chris. These three locations that you run through in the game are presided over by the great fairies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at that stone slab sideways, with the beak being on top.
Looks like a little apple.
Fairy spirits, bud.
Oh, it looks like fairy spirits. But why not just put it that way?
Couldn't tell you.
If that is the case. Okay. Like Pete said earlier, I'll try to get images up on the Instagram if you want to look at the specific things that we're talking about here. Some other notes I have from the first warp portal. I realized when you get small keys in this game, just like a little image of a key hangs over the Link's head with how many keys they have.
Uh-huh. Which helps for a party game.
I mean, you could just put it in the corner like every other game. Like, there's no reason not to.
I mean, especially if you or your AI assistant have a different amount of keys, you can only open doors together if you are linked.
Yeah, the Link who has the key must be present to open the door.
Right.
I don't know if we spoke about this directly. There's one button you can press that will warp your separated Links to each other.
Oh yeah, he whistles like Olimar and your AI companion comes to you.
Which is amazing because they can come to you and like travel over gaps that are impossible to travel over. Like, it's a great quality of life convenience that they made for the anniversary edition.
There are some limits to that, I found, that, like, if he can't get around certain obstacles, then it won't work.
Interesting. I didn't hit any limitations, but I think you've played a bit more of this game than I have.
Much more than you, Chris.
Okay. There's also swimming in this game. It's very basic.
Is there a reason that we mentioned the Nat Hat and now we're sidestepping it?
Because Nat Hat comes like in a second.
Okay.
I mean, because I'm reading my notes linearly.
I thought just because like of how awkward it is, but.
You want to go to Nat Hat?
I mean, we got to talk about it.
All right, let's talk about the Nat Hat. The Nat Hat is a red hat.
It looks like the original wishing cap that Ezlo made.
Exactly. I had that revelation like late on.
Except it shrinks you down to be the size, well, actually smaller than you get in Minish Cap, because you get shrunk down to a pixel and you don't have the little, you know, word bubble showing what your status is. They're going to ask you to do platforming when you are this small, and it is next to impossible.
Oh yeah, the amount of moving platforms you have to board when you're a tiny dude,
like,
is an unfortunate amount.
Because you know how like in most Zelda games there's like tiles, like in your dungeon, you see a dungeon tile and then like the floor makes up numerous tiles.
Mm-hmm.
One of the moving platforms that you will have to jump, that you will have to run onto when you are using the Nat Hat, is like a fourth of that size.
Yeah.
And you have to have like pixel perfect control of where you're stopping. Otherwise, you will fall 10,000 times, I promise.
This is one of the instances where I actually kind of liked using a keyboard, because it felt a little more accurate than if I were using like a joystick, a D-pad, an analog stick.
Chris, it's brutal.
I felt like
it's brutal.
Anyway, some platforms can only be walked on by people wearing clothes of a specific color.
Yeah, I mean, they can also only be seen by those people, too.
Yes, exactly like you said. I really like the use of that in some puzzles.
Yeah, to a degree. I mean, there's going to be times where you're not thinking about that. You're like, well, it's just a huge pit. Can't go that way. Oh, well.
Right, and it's always worth swapping to the other link to check that. But yeah, there are some interesting puzzles where you have to move as one link, swap to the perspective of a different link to find your route, and then switch back to the first link and keep moving, somewhat blind. Yeah, I don't know. Those appear only in this game and never really come back from what I can recall.
I mean, we didn't play Four Swords Adventures, and that's the only other game that it would show up in, right?
That's a good point. We got to play that soon. Anyway, there's also the soccer room coming up.
Oh, yes. Okay. So we alluded to this in the previous episode with the bouncy balls.
Mm-hmm.
Every so often in this game, it doesn't matter what map you're in, eventually there's the possibility that you will encounter a area with these bouncy orange balls that you can smack around with your sword or just kind of nudge with your feet by walking into them. And the goal of these is to soccer kick them into a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And by doing so, you get rupees. Sometimes it's not worth the effort because the RNG will decide how worth your time is.
Right. In regards to the amount of rupees that you get from it, you mean?
Oh, yeah. Because it's random and you'll get like a random allotment. It could just be a bunch of greens and blues. But other times you'll do the exact same thing and you'll get like a bunch of like big reds and big blues.
For sure. Yeah, it can be very fruitful. It could also totally not be. I'll tell you an instance where it's not worth your time. It's not worth your time if you're a dummy like me and you don't realize you can smack them with your sword across a full room.
Well,
and instead slowly kick 8 different balls into 8 different goals.
There is something to be said for subtlety though, Chris, because if you smack it, it might just bounce everywhere but the goal.
You could still get it in like 3 smacks or in like 2 kicks and a smack. I figured this out in like the second or third level.
Ooh.
Anyway,
it's just a little diversion. It doesn't really change much in the game except for, you know, more rupees.
Yeah. essentially.
I think maybe in one level, there's like maybe one version of it in Sea of Trees where you have to like, you have three at the start of a very long and angular path, and you have to move the balls along this long and snaking pathway and down some stairs and around some more corners up into a single goal that is like far away. And you have to move all three to this spot. And if you get all three in, then that unlocks a pathway to some chests. I think that's that's the only example I have where it's not just like a little mini game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you could totally breeze right past it. I don't think they ever really lock you into doing it. It's just extra rupees. Just taking a quick step back, we did pass a room with the shield in it. The shield is...
It's a shield.
It's just a shield.
It's the same as Minish Cap.
It's the same as Minish Cap. It's the same as a lot of Zelda games.
I feel like if a tool is the same as it was in Minish Cap, we don't really need to spend that much time on it.
No, we could just acknowledge that it exists.
Example, boomerang, hits switches, grabs items. That's the boomerang. You get bombs. They are the same bombs, except rolled into one, you have ordinary bombs and remote bombs. So you can let the timer go down or you can press it early to make it explode when you want.
Yep.
That's it. Although I will say the majority of the time, like, you're not going to be uncovering secret passages with bombs. At least that was my experience.
Yeah, there are a few. There is the typical bang the sword against the wall to find the different sounding wall.
Yeah.
In this game, you get like a little exclamation point above your head also when you find a hidden wall, which is a nice feature.
Doesn't happen a lot, though.
Doesn't happen a lot. I mean, I'm also not checking very often, so who knows?
Other items. The bow hits things from far away. Hits Sheikah eye switches. That's about it. Pegasus boots. You run real good. You don't run across water like a Minish Cap, though.
No, but you do run up steep hills, which I don't think you do in too many other games.
Not that are coming to mind. I mean, not with Pegasus boots, anyway.
It also allows you to smash through massive jello cubes that are in this game.
What's with the jello cubes? It's like these big blue jello squares.
I've got to imagine it's whatever the material of the... What are those enemies? You know what? We haven't done enemies.
It's next in my list.
Okay. Let's get through, I guess, all the rooms and then we'll do enemies, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Anyway, past that point, Rock's Cape, same exact thing as Minish Cap. No notes, never change. Love it. Chef kiss.
Yeah. You can hold it to fly. You got a downward thrust. I mean, you don't... The big difference is you don't have to learn these things 7 hours into the game by some shady sword master.
No, you get it right away.
You get it right away.
And the last item is, I think, the only other new one, both to this game and also to the timeline.
The magnetic glove?
Magnetic glove. Pretty cool.
Which... What about this is a glove? This is a giant magnet.
It's on a glove, though.
Is it?
Yeah.
The image of this is just a magnet.
I'm assuming it's like you strap it to your wrist or something. Like, it's a returning item from the Oracle games.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, which, you know, magnets have a less important history to the Zelda franchise, but it's in there.
For sure.
Made of the Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, we definitely should talk about this for a second. So you can change the polarity of the magnet that you're wielding.
So they say. I have not been able to make that work.
How so?
It's got the push and pull mechanic.
Yeah.
Mine only pulls.
Oh, okay. So I've had it work as I would expect it to. So basically, you have the one button you press, the action button.
Yeah.
The magnet switches between two states, red and blue,
right?
So there are magnets in the environment that are red. There are some that are blue.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you hit the action button, it uses the polarity it currently is. And then when you let go of the action button, it switches to the other polarity.
Right. That, I mean, it does change color in my screen.
Right.
It just, it only pulls though.
So if you see a red magnet and you use the red polarity, it'll push you.
Right.
It wasn't doing that for you?
No.
That's why. That sounds like your game was absolutely broken. Yeah, I know. I saw that.
I don't know why. Like, because I would see it change, which, by the way, you can move other players too. So I was able to manipulate Blurtis around the map.
Yeah.
But it only pulls.
In that instance, I only ever had it pull.
Oh, okay.
I'm talking about specifically with the magnets in the environment, though.
You know, now that you say it, I don't remember actually encountering any loose magnets in the world.
So they look sort of like this. I'll send you a picture.
Oh my god, yeah. Okay, so I remember this from the Chambers of Insight, but that's it.
So I'm going to level with you. That's a fair mistake. As someone who played this full video game today, I think I only encountered these in the Chambers of Insight as
oh,
well.
Oh, brother. So this is one of the flaws that we talked about previously, where like the fact that the game is randomly generated, both in rewards and challenges.
Yeah.
So like you could play for several hours, like I have, through multiple epics and not encounter certain aspects of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find that buck wild.
And it's going to make it harder for us to like discuss some elements. So you probably won't hear us spend as much time talking about our favorite rooms, because we might have encountered fully different rooms.
You could, if you happen to be able to play this game in single player, you know, similar to the way we are, you may have an entirely different gameplay experience that either of us had.
Yeah. I mean, I think, let's be clear, I don't think that the levels are very granularly randomly generated.
Yeah, it's chunks.
Chunks, yeah. So if you play through it enough times, you'll probably mostly see the same things, but your first playthrough very likely could be different.
Chris, I feel myself getting angry.
Why?
I'm just thinking about this game.
Oh, all right. We have to keep moving then.
let's talk about enemies, because
let's
you
talk
do,
about enemies
in this area. You do encounter some enemies, because some you have to learn how to deal with your AI companion, and some are a part of how you would deal with these new items.
Yeah.
So we've got some returning enemies from Minish Cap, which makes this fairly simple, right?
Yep. We got Spinies, Bob-ombs, Helmasaurs. We got Rupee Like-likes. We got Ropes, and we got Wizrobes. All returning.
Right. Is it any particular element of Wizrobe?
I think I encountered in this instance a blue one and maybe a red one later.
Okay. So most of these enemies, they work exactly the same as they did in Minish Cap. So we mm-hmm. don't have to worry. We don't have to spend too much time on those.
Nope. You can hear our thoughts on them in the previous season.
Now, I do want to point out, you mentioned Spinies. The name you're looking for is Spiked Beetles.
Oh, why do I say Spinies?
I have to assume because Lakitu were in the previous game.
That might be it.
That's fair, honestly. But the only real difference is in this. One, Bob-ombs, you smack them, they deactivate temporarily. But I believe you can, one, throw them into a fire to activate them, which is new.
Which is wild. Like, they got creative with that way to kill Bob-ombs.
It's neat. And the other way to trigger their fuse is to have two players strike their swords together over them to make a spark.
I never pulled that off. That's amazing.
It's a pretty cool gameplay mechanic if you're in multiplayer. But single player, almost impossible.
Yeah, I didn't even know that was... I mean, I knew you could smack swords together to create fire. I never even thought about doing it to a bomb. That's a lot of fun.
It does work sometimes if you're trying to light a torch that way, because your AI character will know where to stand in order to make that work. On Bob-ombs, I guess the tracking is off or something, so it doesn't quite work.
Yeah. There are other enemies in this game. Actually, we'll speak about one in a second, where the AI just knows to get to the other side of a thing so that you can do an action together, which
that is super cool.
Great job, Grezzo. You nailed that element.
The only other returning enemy that changes would be Helmasaur, and they change in the sense that you can use the magnetic glove to pull the mask off their face.
The magnetic glove kind of becomes the gust jar in some ways, and becomes like a hook shot in other ways.
Does it?
Yeah, because it lets you pull towards things.
Oh, true. Yeah, if it's something that's set in place, you can pull yourself towards it.
Which, like, hey, creative use of one tool to create a similar function of two other tools.
Yeah. Also, it's just dope.
It's pretty cool. I still want to see what that magnet glove looks like in a 3D render. But
anyway, we got three new enemies to talk about today. One of which is actually two, but it's a pair of enemies that have been in several Zelda titles, including Zelda NES, Link to the Past, Link's Awakening, Oracle of Seasons, Oracle of Ages, Four Swords, Four Swords Adventures, and Phantom Hourglass.
Mm-hmm.
Those enemies are Zol and Jell. If you're not
these
familiar...
These are just... Okay, go on.
If you're not familiar with Zol and Jell...
Out of all things for you to give such a detailed explanation about...
Chris, I cannot exaggerate enough times like how like extensive of a monster catalog I'm making for this tabletop RPG.
Please, go on. I love seeing the passion.
Zol and Jell are the original Choo-Choo. TM.
Yeah, they sure look it. These look like Choo-Choo.
Sort of. They're kind of ugly compared to Choo-Choo, because Choo-Choo are cute, you know?
I guess.
Unless you count Skyward Sword. They're not cute in that game.
They are not, yeah.
But Zol are the large versions of these, you know, slimes. I think they only come in red. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
I've definitely seen them in red. I want to say I've seen them in green.
Could be.
I've definitely seen them in green.
In either case, you smack a Zol, it'll split apart into two gel, which is two small slimes. I'm assuming this naming convention is why they're no longer in the franchise.
Why?
Because why give it two separate names based on the size?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, so they
like
just...
Skyward Sword, you smack a Choo-Choo, it splits into two, and they're still just Choo-Choo.
Yeah, I mean, make it simpler. Also, Choo-Choo's just a better name. Zol sounds like some kind of alien enemy.
Zol sounds like something that escaped out of a Dungeons & Dragons or Yu-Gi-Oh! Game.
Yeah, and then you have Gel, which is the polar opposite amount of effort.
At least Gel sounds like what it is. It's a slime.
It sounds only like what it is. It sounds like you put no more effort than needed. Anyway, I don't want to talk anymore about those.
One more small detail, by the way. Zol and Gel also nearly had an appearance in Minish Cap. They have unused sprites that show that they were going to be in the game.
That's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and they would have operated similar, that where you strike them and they split.
Right on, right on. All right, the next enemy we have here, and I have been excited to talk about this the whole time.
Oh, yeah.
Haikun and Nokun. These are two unique enemy types introduced in this game. Just the wildest part about this whole game, maybe, to me. Do you want to describe what these enemies look like?
Absolutely, absolutely. They are kind of these... Well, it depends on whether you're looking at it with the shell open or the shell closed, Chris. Mm-hmm. Because when you first see them, they are these little, like, beetle slimes, like, that seem to be wearing like a pot or shell on their head.
Yeah.
Like you just sent me the one for Haikun. It looks like this little cycloptic bug slime thing. On the sides of its beetle mask helmet has these two yellow handles.
Almost Mickey Mouse ear size.
A little bit, yeah. And the reason these are here is that the way that you fight a Haikun is to smack it, paralyzing it briefly. Then you and another player grab the handles on either side of its head and pull it apart like a New Year's gift cracker.
It is the most gruesome way that Link... And let's be clear... Link has stabbed Ganondorf directly in the head in one of these games. I still think this might be the most gruesome way that Link has taken down any enemy in these games.
Chris, it is so metal. I love it to bits.
He's an absolute bully. Let's talk about Nokun for a second. Nokun is a little soccer ball variant of Haikun. It is closer to the ground. It has little green octopus legs coming out of it.
Is it octopus or a slime? Because to me, they look like, especially Nokun, when it opens its shell to glide, which, by the way, hey, heads up, this thing glides. It shows the body inside, which looks like kind of this ugly green choo-choo with one eye.
Yeah, I guess slime is more appropriate. And Haikun kind of has the body of a stray fairy looking at it. I guess not when you open its shell, but like it's like torso and limbs.
I don't know what you are looking at.
Regardless, Nokun is a variant that is more turtle-like on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Link picks up Nokun and throws it at the other Link, which smacks it with its sword like a baseball bat.
Right, because when you smack either one of these enemies, they get paralyzed and you can grab them.
Mm-hmm.
A Nokun, when you pick it up and throw it, it will automatically start to glide to get away from you, and that's when one of your partners will smack it out of the air. If you're with an AI partner, they immediately place themselves at the perfect spot to smack it, which is so good.
It's so much fun. This is one of the moments where I found this game to be really fun.
I do feel like this one, like a Nokun, must have been really hard to fight without a Blurtus to help.
Oh, with just two people? Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, because you have to place yourself perfectly.
Yeah, I think we actually have the optimal way to fight these guys. Also, like, no wonder we don't see these in any other game. Link literally serial kills them. Like, and if he doesn't kill every one of these, like the rest of them, the ones who survive this encounter, tell the rest of their race, we gotta get out of Hyrule. We are never coming back to Hyrule. You have to see what this kid did to us.
They're only in this game. They're not even in Four Swords Adventures.
They are not present anywhere else.
Now, here's my theory on that, Chris. Haikun and Nokun are made by Vati. These two are Vati originals.
Sure, but Vati's in two other games.
Yes, but as we discussed in season two, Vati had only just learned how to tap into the genetic stuff that was living inside of Malice, right?
Sure.
These ones, he's getting experimental. He's like mixing and matching, making new stuff. And what do they? What's the most defining feature of either one? A single eyeball.
Okay, I like where you're going.
These are his babies. I think Vati loves these ones.
I think he loves these ones, and he sees exactly what Link does to them and thinks, I can't responsibly bring these beautiful creatures into the world anymore if that's how this monster child is going to treat them.
I will only bring my children into existence after the boy is dead.
Yeah, that's a fair theory. I like that. So, I don't know. We basically covered all the warp portals. There's a question mark warp portal at the end, which is basically just using all the abilities.
Oh, yeah. A greatest hits of the tutorial.
This was the first time that I found this game to be fun, was this question mark tutorial. Because it's the first time it felt like a thought out game, as opposed to this singular idea, this singular idea, yeah. This singular idea.
I think I agree with that. It was like playing an actual level.
Yeah. And that's...
Imagine...
And I think that this game is good when it does exactly that. It was just funny to me that there was like no other symbol that they could have used to represent this concept. Like they just literally used a question mark next to the warp portal. They're like, oh, we used the duck faces for the thing at the beginning. I don't know.
You couldn't make it like a fairy symbol. You couldn't make it something a little nicer.
Nope.
It just goes to show that like this is not like a palace or something. This is a bunker.
This is a bunker. And once we finish this question mark warp portal, we can leave the bunker where we meet the great fairies for the first time.
Do we meet them in this level?
Oh, do we not?
No.
Oh, no. We get them next. Okay, good.
No. After this level, we simply get kicked out and keep none of the rupees we collected.
I spent so much time playing this tutorial. It couldn't have been for less.
If you played Minish Cap, skip most of it. Play the first couple of chambers, maybe do the Magnet Glove chamber and move on.
And do the question mark chamber. It's actually fun.
And do the question mark. That is a pretty good one.
But yeah, I don't know. I think that was a pretty good summarization of the different things that we see throughout these rooms. Is there anything that you feel like we missed?
Just one thing.
What's that?
Our travel recommendations.
I didn't know we were doing this. I didn't know we were doing...
I improvised mine on the spot, so...
Okay, why don't you hit me with your first Tyrannosaurus recommendation?
Oh, we're still doing that.
Hey, you spring this on me, I'm springing that back.
So my recommended photo op would be taking a selfie while falling through a portal into one of the chambers. Pretty simple. My recommended attraction would be Nokun Ball.
Your recommended attraction is just the ball itself? Or it's like getting kids to play with it like a soccer ball?
Like you pick it up and throw it, and then you smack it away.
Okay. That is animal abuse.
Is it an animal, though?
It's a living... Yeah, it's sentient. Yeah. That is...
I think the jury's out. I think the jury's out on that one.
If PETA listens to this episode of Hello Hyrule, we are in big trouble.
And my recommended best bite for the Chambers of Insight, Chris, is Haikun Jerky.
Oh.
Seeing like one of those pulled apart like a clam, like it gives me vibes of jerky.
Okay. Okay.
It puts jerky in my soul, Chris.
Yeah, no, it totally does give that impression. Like I actually kind of had a similar thought. And honestly, I should have expected that we were doing this, so I should have probably had something similar right now.
I will never not ask you what something tastes like, Chris.
Fair enough. My photo op is probably going to be you take the Haikun, you split it apart, you take a picture of it as it's expanding and about to die, and then you send that photo to your enemies.
Oh, so you just like send a photo, like a ransom photo to Vati.
Essentially. It's like not ransom, but it's like, oh, you see, did you love this thing? I'm coming for you.
That would do it. I think that would do it.
My alluring attraction is basically crater jumping with magnets. So you have one person with a magnet on the safe side of a wall. You have the tourist who's, you know, has a magnet of the opposite polarity, and basically their magnet pulls them safely across a full crater in the ground.
Okay, great. Kind of like a trampoline park kind of thing.
Yeah, and it continues the trend of our concerningly dangerous attractions that seem to be made constantly on this.
You host on this show long enough, anything you suggest here is going to be dangerous.
Dangerous or cannibalism, which I guess is also dangerous.
That's just you. I am not going to...
And speaking of, I guess my best bite is going to be...
Don't say a fairy. Don't say a fairy. Chris, I'm looking in the eye. Don't say a fairy.
A stray fairy.
That's a problem.
Hey, Pete, what does a stray fairy taste like?
Oh, no. Strawberry Pop-Tarts.
Yeah, okay. I can get behind that. To me, it would be like if you took it like a berry smoothie and froze it, and it had like freezer burn a little bit.
Oh, no.
But like it still was kind of a smoothie.
I'm just imagining that you, that like Happy Tree Friends style, you put a bunch of fairies in the freezer.
Well, no, but I mean, they have skin, right? It's not just going to be like... You know, well, I guess yours is good for that as well. But I don't know. They seem kind of cold to me.
You get ice cream vibes from stray fairies.
Yeah, basically, you know, you take a berry smoothie, you put it in a freezer, and then you just melt it in the shape of one of these little gingerbread creatures. I wasn't ready for the T-Rex. I didn't want to say this.
T-Rex took a bite out of you today, Chris.
All right. Well, I'll be ready next time.
You say that.
Anyway, with the T-Rex out of the way, I guess we're ready for our postcards.
Ooh, heading off to the post office.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to start us off with an email from Torben.
Torben.
Torben says, as a Pirella, I don't have much time for adventures or names for that matter, but I decided to enter the land of Skyward Sword for a second time. I was midway through exploring the ancient cistern when my good friends at the Legend of Zelda Lorecast gave me a magic scroll that allowed the two greatest travel guides to guide me through my journey. And now I have three Whopper theories.
Like Burger King Whoppers?
I have three Whopper theories. Theory number one, they're made from shoes. Actual theory number one, the ancient robots were Sheikah made. The Guardian tech is time shift technology, and ancient arrows warp things into a void space. The reason that larger weapons cannot is because they sacrifice so much power to sustain a blade. This also accounts for their lower durability.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like we've maybe mentioned on this podcast, but I definitely am of... I like the headcanon that the Guardians in Breath of the Wild have similar technology, if not directly the technology from the ancient robots in Skyward Sword.
Oh yeah. No, I can kind of see that. They kind of got similar design specs going on.
And the fact that you defeat a guardian and it's like ancient screws or something, like they use the word ancient in the crafting materials you get.
True.
I think furthers that connection. So this is likely just malice inflicted Sheikah. We know it's malice inflicted Sheikah technology.
Yeah, we know that.
Yeah.
Good point. So we've got guardians, ancient robots, and I think I said in a tweet once, Beamos. Beamos are also probably connected to this.
Yeah. Can you imagine if the beams from Beamos are just warping people to different points in time, though?
Oh, what? That would be buck wild.
I mean, if they're using time shift technology.
Oh, possibly, yeah.
That is a threat.
Whew. I mean, if you had the ability to warp someone in time at will, then you could send them to the end of the universe and you win.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, we got two more theories. I want to keep hitting them. The greatest Zelda race and enemy, Lizalfos.
Oh.
A little bit of editorializing there, I guess, on his part, but are naturally born twins. I gather this because almost every room you encounter Lizalfos, there are almost always two. They also fight in perfect synchronization. For the most part, I get what he's getting at. Like, mini-boss Lizalfos are always two.
Yeah.
There are, like, regular enemy Lizalfos are occasionally one or three or you know, different
amount. Sometimes you get one or three.
Yeah.
I don't know if they really work in sync.
Yeah, I get what he's getting at, but yeah.
That would be crazy, though. If they mirrored each other while they fought you.
They should have had a dual Lizalfos boss fight in Four Swords.
Yeah.
And the amount of links determines the amount of Lizalfos.
That would have been pretty cool.
Number three, the civilization that built the Earth Temple and the Fire Sanctuary are the Lizalfos. Both areas are infested with these creatures, and there are also carvings of dragons and lizards everywhere. I think this is because the Lizalfos, before being corrupted by malice like the Magma, worshipped the dragon Eldin like a guardian deity because of his reptilian form.
Okay.
They also are great stonemasons due to the fact that the Lizalfos made such incredible, and by that I mean incredible, gauntlets and weapons.
I think I can get behind this.
Yeah.
Because I do think that Lizalfos possibly were a species, like a sapient friendly species at one point.
What makes you think that?
Because Zora have been enemies once. Like, they've been monsters.
Sure. Sure. I'd be down to see a friendly Lizalfos civilization in one of the games, for sure.
Yeah.
Tell me what you think. Can't wait for Twilight Princess and Excuse Me Podcast.
I saw Chris melt in real time.
I also cannot wait for Twilight Princess. Thank you for writing in, Torben. Do you want to hit us with one of these reviews, Pete?
We have a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts from Emmett. Second review? Hey, hello, Hyrule. I already wrote in as an email before, but then I remembered that I can give you guys a review on here as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Last time I asked what a sand seal from Breath of the Wild tastes like. Oh, it's you. And I forgot to write what I thought. I think it tastes like deep fried ham, but in order to get it, you must fight through pounds of blubber and fat. Also, listening to a Minish Cap episode, I remembered the best eats was David Jr., so bringing back that nightmare fuel. I must ask, Chris, Pete, what does David Jr. taste like?
We already talked about this, didn't we?
I think we did.
We can't go back to that headspace. It's going to just put us in a bad place for the rest of the season.
Anyways, you guys are my favorite podcast. Keep up the awesome work and excuse me, review.
Thank you, Emmett.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Please stop asking us what things that make us upset taste like. I'm also trying to get Pete to stop asking that as well.
I defy you to make me stop, Chris.
All right. Anyway, we have another email from Jerome who says, hello, Hyrule. He probably says it like that. I'm assuming he says it like that.
Like a vampire?
Hello, Hyrule. I have been listening to your show for almost the entire time. I'm currently doing the Champion's Ballad. Can't wait to start riding around on the Master Cycle.
Yes!
Somehow, the technology of this fantasy land has advanced enough to create such a thing, and yet most places still rely on horseback. I was watching another person explore the land of Skyrule recently, and they posed an interesting question. What does waking water taste like?
Ooh.
Definitely is an interesting one since it has water in its name, but it doesn't look like water. So for listeners who might not remember, waking water is one where in the Silent Realm, it's the sparkling water that if you touch it, ruins your day.
It's the reflective red no-no water.
It is the reflective red no-no water. And what it tastes like, I'm pretty sure, is when it's like when you're a kid and you're in your friend's pool and you accidentally open your mouth and you drink some chlorine water.
Ooh. Yeah, I can kind of see that. There's definitely an acidic quality to it.
Especially if you drink enough chlorine water that it melts your brain and warps you to a different dimension.
I was just going to say it tastes like pennies.
That's also good. Yeah, no, that makes sense too. Hit us with another review.
5-star review from Fairy Crypt. A creative and engaging podcast about Zelda. One of my favorite school projects was creating a travel brochure. This podcast and its hosts take me back to that project in the 6th grade with their decision to treat sections of each Zelda game like a travel destination. I love Chris and Pete's banter, and I am encouraged to pick up my favorite games again.
Hey, that's awesome. Thank you, Fairy Crypt. Fairy Crypt actually works on another Zelda podcast, which is
really
one of my favorite podcasts to listen to while I'm playing games for this show, because they have a lot of great discussions about Zelda games, so I highly recommend them.
Nice.
I have an email here from Dustin. Dustin says, first and foremost, amazing podcast. 100 out of 5 stars. I hope you went to iTunes reviews and also gave us 100 out of 5 stars, Dustin.
Yeah, to give us 100, you have to go to the Apple store and like rate us on every device.
So I thought it was funny. Pete mentioned that usually a person's first Zelda is their favorite, but that's not true in my case. I played Majora's Mask for the first time when I was about 7 or 8, and then Ocarina after. Now, while both of these are great games in their own right, Twilight Princess is my favorite game by a huge margin.
Hey.
I could honestly talk about what I like just from the intro for hours. Just to piggyback off this thought, the opening lines of Twilight Princess are killer.
Mm.
I love the tone of the opening of Twilight Princess. I'm with you, Dustin. Great pick there. Now for Dustin's question. If you could have any item from any Zelda game in real life, what would it be?
Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah, I didn't spend much time thinking about this before this recording right now. I am going to have to go with double claw shots.
Ooh, that is pretty good. That is pretty good. I would probably get arrested if I had those.
I would probably just immediately like fall from a very, very high place and break my whole body.
Part of me is tempted to say something perishable like a stamina potion. But if I had to go with like a tool, no, Cane of Pachi.
Cane, wait, no, you're getting worse ideas. You want a thing that makes you jump?
The thing that it's like, if I see like, you know, someone's double parked, I'm gonna flip their car.
Pete, I can't believe we spent a whole season on the Minish Cap and I haven't had this thought. Can you think of what it looks like when a human being in real life uses the Cane of Pachi?
Neck damage.
just the visual image of someone using it. Anyway, thank you for the question, Dustin. Thank you for the 100 stars. Do you have another review for us, Pete?
I do. DarkLink333 says, postcard from the sky, 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. I just finished your gratitude tour and heard you call for Socia, in parentheses, Sky Occupational Safety and Health Association.
I love this, DarkLink.
It's very good. Thanks to the use of a powerful time shift device the Sheikah had made for Socia, I have investigated this so-called fun island and have/will shut it down. There are several Socia violations there. This podcast is fantastic and makes my job far more interesting for the parts where I'm not time shifting. So thank you. I live in Hyrule and you teach even me things I didn't know. I must know, what does an ancient flower taste like?
So you don't eat the ancient flower because that's going to essentially just be like eating grass. But what you do is you break it up into leaves and you make a tea out of it.
Ah, the bomb flower solution.
But the ancient flower tea, what it does is it brings you back in time. So like you're sitting in your house drinking tea, but it's suddenly the room that you're sitting in is inhabited by the previous family who owned the house. And you lose your mind because you think, holy cow, there are ghosts all over.
You know what? Same answer, but the memories are like nice and cozy memories of like teas and warm drinks you had when you were younger.
And then suddenly the neighbors of the previous family's house barge into the door and they all have swords.
Why is this happening?
And then the family has swords too, and they start shouting at each other.
Oh, I see. This is just where we're going.
Do you have another review?
I have one last review. I don't know how to pronounce this. B-I-G-E-P-E-N-A.
Big Apenna.
B-J Pena?
Big Apenna? Like Epona?
Big, it could be.
Okay.
5-star review says, awesome. Let's eat David Jr. I love this podcast. I could listen to Pete and Chris talk about Zelda for hours. I enjoy the setup, and the banter and theories keep me going back for replays of the games. I never laughed so hard than the idea of eating David Jr. I am not a fan of Tingle and his kin, they say in parentheses. As an aside, I enjoy knowing more about the hosts I listen to. I heard that you were both in-laws to each other. Are there any other personal info you'd want to share with us? Were you friends first? What is your non-Zelda life like? This is some great work. Thank you. I keep keep coming back for more. Chris, do you want to share your social security number here on the podcast?
The expiration date on my credit card is July 2025. I don't know. We have to be careful with the amount of stuff I guess we say, and maybe sometimes we just play it fast and loose.
Yeah, well, let's not incriminate ourselves in anything. I will say that we were friends before we were in-laws.
We were friends for a long time before we were in-laws. I think we were probably became friends 2011 or 2012.
Oh, don't ask me to give a number. I couldn't.
We used to just hang out and have like game days where we would go over each other's houses and play video games.
Yeah.
Never Zelda games, like always co-op games.
Yeah, it'd be a little weird if we just shared like single player games.
But at that time, I remember you were a big Zelda fan and I wasn't really too involved in the series.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I played Breath of the Wild, I think I messaged you saying, I think I'm going to go back and play all of the games because this game was so cool.
Yeah, that happened before I sent you a message. Was it during the pandemic that I messaged you?
Yeah, and then during the pandemic, you had the great idea of, hey, do you want to podcast it? And also, do you want to be like a cool travel guide thing?
I think when I asked you about making a podcast, I think your first reply to me was just saying like, I will get back to you in a minute. I'm in a meeting, but I am freaking out about this idea.
I remember that moment. I loved, because you pitched it as that travel guide idea, it was exciting. Yeah. I mean, I think we've always been on the same page about a lot of like creative things like this, and it just kind of clicked into place and it's been fun. We just spent about a year preparing what this show is going to be before.
Oh, life just kept happening.
Yeah, before any episodes actually hit. But yeah, I think that's kind of a brief history of some of the things.
Yeah, I think that's about your good. That's a more or less all you're going to get, unless something incidentally comes up.
I mean, yeah, if you keep listening, you'll hear maybe more tidbits. But yeah, thank you for reaching out. And that's very kind of you to say those nice things.
Yeah.
And also, don't try to figure out the rest of my credit card information, please.
Joke's on you. It expired 5 years ago.
I have an email here from Jason.
Jason.
Jason says, hey, Pete.
Oh.
I'm noticing that there's a lack of, hey, Chris, but okay, that's fine. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. Probably a typo. Jason says, hey, Pete, sorry that I'm taking it to Tears of the Kingdom while you guys are now busy playing Four Swords. But to get to the point, I have something to talk about with you.
Okay.
I have a theory, and this is a little awkward, but it's a good one as well. If the Sheikah Slate is gone, then could the arm be another version of Sheikah Tech? Because it could be an old Guardian design, or it could be one of the things Princess Zelda was studying.
It could be like a chunk of a sword AI.
Yeah, or it could be an arm technology created to wave hi to both co-hosts of a podcast properly and respectfully. Thank you very much, Jason. Yeah, I think there's a definite non-zero percent chance that this is some form of Sheikah technology. We've seen the previous game was loaded with Sheikah technology.
Yeah, why not?
That's a good theory. Thank you, Jason. One last email. Oliver says, I love your podcast. You are number one on my podcast list. Also, I was listening through the first two seasons again when you dropped your bloopers and episode zero of Four Swords, and I saw the art, and the first thing I thought was, there's four of them now. But after a few seconds, I got why you did that. There's no need to shorten the length of your episodes. That would give me less to listen to. Hey, you're in luck, Oliver. This is a 2-hour podcast recording so far.
Man, I hope this one cooks down.
Also, shout out to Pete, who does the art for all of these.
Yay! Shout out to me. I stole this idea from Kingdom Smarts.
Okay. I think that's going to wrap up the post office.
All caught up.
Wow. Feels good to be caught up.
And as usual, if you have any opinions on why Vati is referred to as a wind mage, you can send us a postcard at HyrulePod@gmail.com. Or by dropping us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read your message here, and you'll be helping more listeners like you to find the show.
Also, if you have any friends who like The Legend of Zelda, recommend this show to them if you think they'd like it. Sharing this podcast with people you know in your real life means a lot to us, and we love to hear that people are doing it.
Tell them, like, hey, you want to listen to a weird short season of a very good podcast? Maybe, have them start off with season 3.
Maybe don't start with season 3. Maybe start with, like, season 1 or 2. This is a weird one.
You can also find the show on Twitter, Insta, and Tumblr at Hyrule Pod. If you want to find me or Chris individually on Twitter, you can find me at the edge of my peat.
I am at a man named Babs, B-A-B-S.
That's going to do it for this episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Next time, we will be stepping into three different locations.
That's right. Death Mountain, Talus Cave, and the Sea of Trees.
But until then, I have been Pete.
I've been Chris.
Excuse me, podcast. How bizarre is it that this is the first time we're going to Death Mountain? Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're starting off on this note, huh? I feel like there's an argument that Elden Volcano from Skyward Sword. Okay, anyway.
We'll save it. We'll get there.